Roy Milner, Reel 5.
I wanted to show you that one of the front here, which gives a rather good impression of, you know, what it is.
Was it dangerous going out like that? I mean, of course it was potentially dangerous, but were there actually problems?
Very, very seldom. You might hear of one, but you only served 12 months up there, 12 to 15. I don't think we lost a man in that time. I don't think there was any serious trouble. There was an aerodrome just outside Llandicotal. Can't see from here, but it was that way from this area. It was over here. There was a big valley which had been levelled out, aerodrome. And aircraft used to land there occasionally. When there was a big powwow going on, they used to have it on the aerodrome. When there was trouble, we used to go out and sit on the aerodrome. There'd probably be a demarcation line, you know. And we'd sit over here brewing tea, and they'd sit over there brewing tea. We never talked to each other, never did anything. And after a while, they'd get fed up and go away, and so would we. And that's, you know... I wasn't there at the time, but I remember people telling me about the Lahore riots. He said, always makes me laugh. He said, I don't know where they were rioting, he said, but in the main street, we sat down and they sat down. And he said, if they got too close, we used to fire a shot into the air and they'd all move back again. But he said there was no riots, not between us and them. We were peacekeeping forces. And it was the same on the frontier. Providing they kept to themselves, we kept to us, we didn't bother. But all our journeys out were organised. And one of the reasons we used to be organised, when I say we, I'm talking about the regiment, we would do a scheme, and it would be really to protect the, what they called the political agent, who sort of had to go from village to village, I don't know, collect taxes, we were told, whether that was true or not, I don't know, but to collect taxes, etc. And the fact that he had troops lining the hills either side in case of trouble probably made these natives say, all right, how much do we owe you? Here's your rates, you know, and pay up. And then they'd move on, and we'd be away for a week, perhaps. And then we'd all come trooping back in and say, oh, that was tough. It wasn't. Because we were so fit that it didn't mean anything. Which brings me to one other point that one learns in a place like that, and that is how to scrounge. If you decided you didn't want to go on this particular hike, which would last a week, and meant doing silly things like stopping for the night, and the first thing you did was to build a wall all around where you were going to stop. And we'd be carrying boulders and piling them up and up and up, and I've got some pictures in here, piling them up, and they used to say, you lay down behind this, and I used to think, well, it'll take anybody to climb over that. But there would be sentries around, and I suppose it was some sort of protection. We then learnt, some of us, not all of us, how to go along and say, cool, I twisted my ankle, first day out. I was running down the Kudza, and went over and it's really painful, and hop around, and he'd say, better get back to camp and hospital. And you'd walk into the hospital and say, what's up with you? And he'd say, oh, my leg. And he said, I didn't see you limping. Say, no, well, it was just, I was trying it out, sir. What's wrong with it? I twisted my ankle on the Kudza. And he'd say, let's have a look. And he would say, all right, then come and see me in a week's time. And you'd go away and say, well, the chaps are out for the next 5-6 days and you've really got not much to do. And there is a method, I don't know whether you've ever heard of it, which by which you can make your knees swell up. See? You take a wet towel to a knee and flip it. Your knee will swell. And you're going to say, oh, terrible sweat, you know. Oh, yes, it is. Have an elastic bandage, huh? And he'd say, yes, you'd better put an elastic bandage on it. And see me in a week, right, sir? And you'd get outside. It wouldn't even pain. But, you know, these things were done, I think in many respects they were done because people wanted to be show-offs. And that's the word, show-off. They want to say, I'll show you. I'll get out of this sort of thing. And report sick. Oh, this knee is mine. It's terrible. And they got out of it.
You'd think the doctor would have caught on fairly soon.
Oh, I think they probably did. But they just said, oh, well. You think you put one over on me, but you haven't actually. And I
suppose they didn't care.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. And I think another way of looking at it was that if they clobbered the trick, a new one might spring up that they couldn't detect so quickly. Or they might say, well, it doesn't do any damage, so why bother? What's one more or less out on the card hike? It's only two or three chaps, I suppose. So I think that they sort of tongue-in-cheek said, yes, it's very bad, and, you know, let's not bother about him not being on the parade. Because one of the funny things they used to ask you when you went in like this, and I did it once, actually, and he said to me, how much service have you got in? And I remember saying, 7 years, sir. He says, oh, yeah. Well, he didn't know I started as a boy. And if you've got 7 years in, you're finished. Your time's up, because you signed for a 7 and a 5. So he says, oh, well, he's on his way home anyway. Yes, let the poor chap go. So these, you know, they all add up. But I'm quite sure that the doctors weren't that silly. I think that they knew a thing or two, and tongue-in-cheek, and let it ride sort of thing. That's the way I've looked at it, in retrospect, anyway. Even at that time, I think, I bet he knows.
Were you ever really sick?
Yes. Not while I was up at Landikotal, but not long after I got out to India, I had a very bad attack of weeping pleurisy. And I was in hospital all 6-8 weeks, I think. On my back for most of the time. I had 2.5 pints of fluid taken from my lung linings, and I was ill. And when I came out of hospital, I went almost straight up to the hills, and up there I didn't do any duties at all. I was, there's a saying or an expression, or call it what you will, but if you go sick, they mark you M&D, which means medicine and duty. Attend A means attend again, but carry on your duties. 10B means light duties, and attend C means no duties at all. Or you could get attend C bed down. That means to say, you make your bed down now, everybody else makes their bed up. You make your bed down if you feel like you can lay on your bed. If anybody says, out on parade, you say, 10C, bed down, Sarge. He can't move you. So you've got the medical thing. So I was at 10C for 6 weeks up in the hills, I think, while I was recuperating. I was down to sort of 8 stone nothing. And the old MO said, I want you to put on some weight. I was as skinny as a rake. And I said, all right. And I used to eat and drink, and not alcohol, incidentally, but eat plenty, drink tea like nobody's business, and I used to go for walks. I used to get somebody's dog and say, Jim, I'll take your cooter for a walk, and he'd say yes, but everyone else on parade. And I'd go out the back entrance with a dog and a stick and walk up round the hills and down again, a couple of hours out and back again. And I'd even do a little training for the running, you know, go and run round the football pitch a couple of times, say, only half a pitch this time, and 3/4 of a pitch for a couple of days' time. But I kept in trim, and every week I went up to the medical room, first thing on the scales. I always remember going 1 week, and the chap said, don't believe it, put on a stone this week, don't believe it, get on there again. Yes, you're 11 stone. When I went into, this is the corporal, when I went to the medical officer, he said, you put on a bloody stone? Don't believe it. Bring them scales in here. I had to get on the scales again. He said, couldn't have been right last week. That's all I can say. Couldn't have been right last week. And I said, I think it was. I said, I'm feeling pretty fit. And he said, oh, well, we'll give you another week. Come and see me in a week's time. I was getting a bit fed up not doing any praise, I think. I wanted to be in with the chaps. I wasn't blowing my flute or my bugle or anything else in this time. I was just loafing around, but it was a sort of convalescent period.
Did you get sick because you were in India, or was that coincidental?
I rather think it was perhaps coincidental, because I arrived in the, I think it was September, October. I went to camp, marched to camp, in the end of October, November, marched to a place called Lakerwal Cass, where we crossed quicksands to get there. It's a frightening experience to run across quicksands and to see mules sinking to their tummies up in this sand and sort of heaving out of it. And then we got lost and we were marching through clouds of dust, and there were little lamps up here where somebody was leading the way, this way, this way. And we got to camp, and we did, I think, 3 or 4 weeks, really rigorous training. And I was under no illusions. I didn't suffer at all in that time. And we marched back to barracks. Now, remember the difference in the march out and the march back. How we bounced along that tarmac road for the last few miles, you know, as if to say, 25 miles, it's nothing. Boom, boom, boom. And we are there, so fit. Now, that would be in November. I didn't go in hospital with pleurisy until about the following April, May. So that was the only strenuous thing I'd done. How I picked up pleurisy, I wouldn't really know. But that was the only serious illness I had, I think, in the whole of my army career. I had odd surgical things go wrong, but medically, I mean, I call that a medical thing. That was the only thing I think I had in the whole army career. My teeth were always good and fit, and I was always fit, and that's the way I enjoyed life.
Were there health problems you were likely to encounter in India?
Yes, plenty. There was malaria, for which we used to have horrible things called Mepocrine tablets, little tiny yellow perils, as they were called, and used to have to take these periodically, but lots of chaps didn't. I did. Hated them, but I think, this is what they tell me to do, take Mepocrine. And even when I came home on leave, the doctor said, no, you take this with you. It's a bottle of Mepocrine tablets, and you take them. I never had malaria. That's one of the things. Dysentery was another problem. I never had it. What do they call this? Form of beriberi. It's another thing that they have. I forget the name of it now. It's quite common. Well, it's not common here, but people do get it here. Stomach upset. They were sort of medical things. And, of course, there was cholera. Cholera was one of the things that I used to dread getting. I dreaded certain diseases all my life. Cholera was one of them, and I can't say that I've ever seen a cholera victim. I do know that they can detect cholera in the area, and at which stage they will come and inoculate everybody, but everybody. And I've heard people say they just sit you up in bed, plunge a needle into your chest, give a squirt, and push you back again. That's your inoculation. It could be 2 a.m. They do it by a system of lanterns or something, what they call cholera lanterns. And that was, I think I was frightened of cholera because before I went there, I heard one of these tales, which I think is worth repeating because it's bizarre. Cholera is a cloud that floats along at varying heights, you see. And this tale was, you must know about bungalows, that they tend to be long. You can get a whole company in there, it could be 300 or 400 chaps. Whole company in one bungalow, and no doors, just openings. Also, you could see right out the end. and you have an outside veranda, an inside veranda, and then the sleeping quarters. And beds, you don't put your head up to the wall. You always have your feet to the wall and your head's out. And the story went that this cholera cloud came in at the bottom door and floated along at the height of the beds. And in the morning, everybody was dead from cholera. All except one chap who came in blind drunk that night, couldn't get into bed and fell on the floor, and the cloud passed over him. But everybody else in the bungalow was dead, except him. And he went mad when he found out. Now, there may have been some truth in that story originally, but I, in my innocence, believed it. What's catch? In my innocence, I believed that. And when I got out there, I used to see these lights up in the trees. And I said, what's that? And they used to say, oh, that's cholera lanterns. And having heard the story, I knew what the lanterns were all about. Whether there were cholera lanterns, I don't know. I don't know to this day. But I never saw a cholera victim. And I couldn't say that chap in my regiment had cholera.
Why were the men's heads into the bungalow instead of at the wall? Did that have to do with cholera as well?
I don't really know. I rather think it was one of those things. If you think, we all always had mosquito nets to our beds. And the wire that ran along to which you attached your mosquito net and drooped it down tended to come out from the wall rather than be up that end. And if mosquitoes or anything congregated, they would congregate round that end, we thought. I had a corner bed, actually. This is why I was to sort of clean out every Thursday, give it a good sweep and so forth, so that nothing had the chance to get there and build itself up a nest, a home or something like this. It was just one of those things. It was always, when I got there, everybody slept that way, so I just followed suit. And at that time, I never thought to say, why don't you put your head up that way? It was just that everybody didn't, and I accepted it. Had I been a bit more inquisitive, I might have said, why? But I didn't. I didn't bother. I just fell into the routine.
Speaking of health, what about sunstroke? Or heat stroke?
It was apparently a problem many years before I was there. One of the strict rules when I was there is that you must not be caught without your topi on. And I've seen chaps naked except for a pair of choppies, a pair of football shorts and a topi wandering around. Now, you're a lady, and I don't suppose you go anywhere without saying, where's my handbag? We never went anywhere without saying, where's my topi? On, you know. Across the yard, everywhere. It was automatic. Where's my topi? Put the topi on. I think that system has changed since. There's not the accent on wearing a topi now. At one time, they used to wear spine pads and everything. Gradually drifted out, don't need them. During the war, for instance, they didn't. Lots of them wore bush hat. But it's just that you get, I think, a head covering. The incidence of sunstroke or heat stroke in the time I served in India, I can't really recall seeing anybody in particular. I have an idea that there was one case, but it's a thing that can be put on to some extent. They used to call it Dulali Tap. It's, you know, everybody, or many people, work their ticket. And this is another scene where there are hundreds of stories about the chap who worked his ticket couldn't hear. Stone deaf. And everything. Right to the last minute, sign here. To get his ticket, you see, and signed here. And When he went to leave the room, when he got to the door, the chap said, "Oh, just a minute," in a quiet voice. And the chap came back and said, "Yes, sir." You know, these sort of... Because, no doubt about it, chaps do work their ticket. They go all jungly and this sort of thing, you see, deliberately. So some of them do the sunstroke bit. They sort of go around with glazed eyes and sort of say, So they get their ticket. No, I can't recall any great incidents of it in my regiment. I do remember people talking about others who had done it, and I may well have seen people who were on the make but didn't get there and eventually were quite sane and sober again, you know, realised they'd lost out and said, all right. I'm a bug. I'm a junkie on crosswords, you know.
How did you get crosswords in India?
Titbits was the magazine which I took up because a friend of mine said to me one day, he asked me the answer to a clue. I forget what it was. And then he showed me another one. I couldn't help him. Then he showed me another one. He said, "What about that for a clue then?" And I always remember this one, and it said, nevertheless, shiny trousers, or words like that. And the answer was notwithstanding. And when you look at it, it's clever. And I said, "Let's have a look at that thing." He'd finished it. I said, "Let's have a look at that." And, you know, I looked at that clue, answer. How do they arrive at that? And I thought, this is all clever stuff, you know. And I became hooked. And we used to get this Titbits. It was probably 6 or 8 weeks out of date when we got it. Came by sea. And we used to do this together, this Titbits. And I always remember in those days of Titbits, the crossword was always on the back page. Let's get the Titbits straight to the back page. Don't mind what was in the book. Let's do the crossword first. I still do it today in Titbits.
Yes, I see.
Haven't read a word of this yet. I got it last night. I've been at it. So... And my wife will say, "Oh, he needs a junkie on crosswords, serious, terrible." But that's the way of life.
You told me people did photography and knitting, handicrafts. How did you get the supplies?
Oh, bazaar. Just go down the bazaar and buy, dishes. Go to the photographers. Lots of photographers are about. Go to the photographer and say, "I want to buy a dish for this. I want some hypo. I want this. I want that. I want that." And... most of the bungalows have dead end, not dead ends, but little bunks on the end. Was to get to use these as dark rooms. Or you'd come to the drum stores, for instance, you see, and say, "Can I develop some..." "Yes, come in. I've got to have it dark." "Say, look, you go in, you lock the door on the inside. I'll sit out on the steps." And you'd sit on the steps, maybe reading a magazine, and he'd be in there doing it in the dark room. All homemade stuff that, you know, like lamps. You'd get a lamp. Couldn't buy a red lamp. But you always put a bit of red rag around it and give yourself a red glow and all this sort of thing. And they'd have sheets of glass and all this sort of thing to clip them to and hold them up to the light. And quite lots of these pictures are from that, taken and developed by people in the regiment. They used to... as I say, all these handicrafts were taught. There was one chap who used to do some marvellous wood carving, and he could carve you a Buddha. You know, and you'd think, "God, I wish I could do that." And I think if you put your mind to it, you could have done. You know, you could have picked it up here and there. Marvellous little set of tools he had, little carving tools, about 12 different shaped knives, which he used to do it with. We used to go voluntary to what you'd call further education. See, in the army, you have a third certificate of education, a second, a first, and a special. You only need the third and the second. The second gets you your proficiency money. Your first, which is a bit higher, gets you nothing extra, and your special gets you nothing extra. It probably takes you through the promotion ladder quicker, but who cares about promotion anyway? So we used to go to school. I went to school. Say, are you going to try for your first this year? Say, well, I think so. We'd go and book in at the school and go for 2 hours at night. Twice a week, three times a week, maybe. And on the nights we didn't go there, we'd go up to gymnasiums. Especially in Llandicotal, there wasn't the space, really, to go running. We'd go up to gymnasium and do all sorts of mad things. We used to organise dances. No partners. Him and him. Him and him. You know, just for the fun of it. And often we'd be up there with ammunition boots on. Till the PE instructor saw us and said, get out of here! Get some shoes on. But that sort of thing, we'd have dances, we'd have band concerts where everybody went mad. But it, as I say, I think everything that could be done in India was done for entertainment's sake. Most of it we did ourselves. And the officers used to join in and say yes. And we had a stalwart in our regiment, and that was the CO's daughter. And she liked our mad dance band. And every time there was a function, she used to say, let's have the crazy crowd. I think, have I got anything of the crazy crowd? But that's what we used to do. Let's have the crazy crowd. And we used to get by on that sort of thing. Did I put something away in my pocket somewhere? We were the early... Oh, typical haircut for chaps in India. In the summer, called prickly heat. You know, we used to have it all shaved off and this...
Itching on your head.
Yeah, due to perspiration. And we used to have it all shaved off and think nothing of it. But, I mean, nobody, lots of people went about it and did that. And that's the crazy crowd as a dance band, but without their uniforms on. I used to have some with their uniforms on somewhere, but I don't know what happened to them.
Speaking of dancing.
So life was made...
Speaking of dancing, not at Llandicotal, where I know women wouldn't have been allowed, but at other places, were there any women to dance with?
Mm-hmm. Mainly Anglo-Indians, who would think it a step up the social scale to have a boyfriend who was in uniform. It was done, but that was the sort of gist of the dance partners were these chili crackers, as they were affectionately or non-affectionately known. This is another area in which stories arise, you see. I'm only repeating stories, I'm not saying what I saw. That there was a dance where a chap went up to a half-caste girl and said, please may I have this dance, or words to that effect, probably said, let's borrow your body for a wriggle or something like this. And she said, no thanks. And so he walked away, and a minute later she got up and danced with a half-caste bloke. And he went... He's supposed to have stopped the band, went up to these two who were in the middle of the floor and said, I'm an Englishman. You're a wog. Now get your shoes off when you're in my presence. Now, this is one of those tales. I couldn't vouch for it, but it's one of the tales. And there might be some truth in it. I think it's probably embellished, you know. He probably said it to her while the band was still playing or something, and she said... get knotted or words to that effect, and he went away. But